Okay, before we get started, a little bit of a hitch this week. I got really, really sick over the weekend. I had half of the podcast recorded. I got all the way up to the badass movie quote of the week. And then I came down sick for the weekend, and I couldn't do anything. So, sadly, this podcast is now going to be a day late or so, and it's going to be a little shortened. So I'm sitting down right now. I'm going to finish up the badass movie quote of the week, give you guys a couple of Podomatics, but not the full, like, half hour or so they usually do. So I think this week we're going to clock in just under an hour, but it should all be good. I'm back on track. Hopefully next week everything runs smooth, but we'll see how it goes. Anyway, enjoy.
Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 26 of Nerd Pride Radio. 26, the number of letters in the alphabet, the number of miles in a marathon, and the number of sides in a rhombocuboctahedron. So ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I'm a D&D nerd, a history nerd, sci-fi nerd, comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's at least seven other kinds of nerds I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place where I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right, Nerd Pride Radio smells like the Hufflepuff's Quidditch locker room. This week, I've got some feedback. But I'm going to save that until we get to the gaming portion because it's very, very relevant. We'll get there in a minute. And that sends us straight into the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting, I add it to the master list and the best stuff gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. First thing on the master list, a little meta talk.
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, okay, you notice I got some different theme music. I don't know what theme music it is because I haven't decided yet. I've put together a couple of different ones using my same sound clips, some new music that I got for free. This is probably not what I'm going to stick with because I haven't been thrilled to death with anything. There's a lot of stuff I like, but nothing that just kind of struck me as perfect. So that'll come with time. I'll keep experimenting. I was having a conversation with Akiva about this, and his suggestion, and he's completely right, is that I need to find some independent artists, people who aren't really big yet, but who would like the exposure and who could be cool about it, and just ask them for permission to use some songs I like. That's exactly how we got the theme song to the last podcast that we did. The Animal Cast theme song was from Oppenheimer, and I just wrote them an email and said, hey, you mind if we use it? And they were thrilled to death. They said, yeah, go ahead. So here's the deal. If anyone out there has some suggestions for songs I can use as bumper clips or songs I can use as the theme music, something that has a really good rockin' instrumental that I can lay my sound clips over, that kind of stuff, just send me ideas. I mean, whether it's free music, as long as you know the license is free, or if it's some indie band that you're aware of that I don't know of yet, let me know. And if I like the music, I'll ask them. I'll try it out. We'll see how it all works. So all the stuff you hear today is subject to change without notice. But like I say, we're going to get it refined. We're going to get to where we're all happy with it. You'll be excited to trust me on this. But with that business out of the way, we will get straight into my gaming table.
You can't really call it a game. It was an obscenity.
I'm weaning.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I'm here to share it with you. First off, I have that feedback, but we'll get to that in a minute. Oh my God, I just played Portal. I've never played Portal. I know. I'm way out of date here. I get that. I mean, I get it. It's only been out for 5 years. Where have I been, right? All right, here's the deal. My oldest son, Gygax, Found my old Half-Life game. Loved my old Half-Life game. Played it to death. He's played it all the way through a couple of times. Loves the game. And so for Christmas, he wanted Half-Life 2, which, okay, cool enough by me. We wound up getting him the Half-Life 2 orange box. And you all know this. Nobody told me. We get the Half-Life orange box, and it comes with not only Half-Life 2 plus a million Half-Life 2 expansions, but, oh my God, Portal is in there. Just packaged in with it? That's how Portal got shipped initially? I had no idea. So my son plays Portal and loves Portal, and he's up to, level 18, 19. He hasn't had a lot of time with it yet, but he's loving it. And so I'm watching over his shoulder, and I'm so fascinated by this game that I have to play. It's the first new video game that I have tried that I've played in a long time. I don't even know why I bother putting the word video games into the intro to my gaming table segment, because I never play video games anymore. Well, I'm playing this one, and oh my God, Portal is awesome. If you aren't aware of Portal, here's the 3-second version. You are a science experiment. Okay, this is a little longer than 3 seconds. You are a subject in a science experiment, and ultimately you wind up getting a gun that allows you to shoot portals. You can shoot an orange portal and a blue portal, and they stick to the walls or the floors or wherever you put them. And just like the black hole that the coyote would pick up in the Roadrunner cartoons, and wherever he lays it down, it makes a hole. Well, that's what the portals do. So if you fall into or walk into the orange hole, you'll come out the blue one, wherever you've put it. And that's it. And then they put you in these big puzzles, and you have to figure out how to get out by using your portals. And it's just really cool. Yeah, I mean, it's a puzzle game, but it's a really complex one built on the Half-Life 2 platform. So there's lots of detail in it. The detail is crazy wild, because GLaDOS, the computer that keeps talking to you, they have got dialogue everywhere. There's no reason for this dialogue other than to put you on edge and make it all a little creepy and a little funny and a little weird. And then there's parts where you can get behind the scenes. And anyway, I'm not going to rave on about it, because either you've already played it and you think I'm an idiot for going on because it's 5 years old, or you haven't played it, in which case, go find it. Holy crap, I think we picked up Half-Life 2, the orange box, I think we picked up for like $20, and it comes with all that junk in it. If you don't have it already, don't be an idiot like me. Don't wait this long. Go get it now. It's so cool. But then the second part of my gaming table is that feedback I mentioned. That's right. Holy Flip, I got another letter from Flip. Flip writes to me and says, "Hi, Mike. Thanks a mil for mentioning on your podcast. Yay! I was wondering if you were going to Gen Con this year. A friend of mine and I are going, or at least planning to, and are super excited. I saw an Animal Ball that you and Kyle went a few years ago. Since we are traveling from Ireland and I've never been to a gaming convention to speak of, can you give us some advice? We plan to stay the whole 16th to 19th of August. How do we get tickets for Gen Con? Where do we buy them? Where should we stay for the time we're there? Can you recommend somewhere very close and affordable? What other considerations should we make? Really looking forward to your reply. Flip." Oh, Flip, this is a great question, because I love Gen Con and I just went last year. So my first recommendation is you should have a very wealthy parent who is willing to do all the planning and pay for everything. That's how Kyle and I went the first time, and that was 5 years ago, something like that. And we had an awesome time because our mom paid for all of it. We were going down for the award ceremony for our podcast, and we didn't win, obviously. But she wanted to treat us, and she paid for everything, and we had a great, great time, and it was awesome. However, if, like when I went last year, you're going to pay your own way on this one, then there's some other considerations in there. I went with my oldest son, Gygax, because he had just turned 16, and when my next son turns 16 in a couple of years, I'm going to wind up going again. And first off, to go get your tickets, go get them now. Right this moment. Go to GenCon.com, and right on the front page, it should say Gen Con Indianapolis or Gen Con Indy or whatever it is. Click on the Indianapolis link, and then right there on the main page, it should have a register button or a buy your tickets now button, and just get them. You can buy them all online, get it all done this moment. The sooner the better, because once you buy your tickets, they're going to give you links to everything else. Everything you need to plan this trip is all right there for you. They will give you a housing code, and Housing Link, because they have several blocks of rooms marked out in various hotels so that you can go through them to supposedly get their special Gen Con prices. I don't know how special those prices are, but there's lots of available housing, lots of hotels to stay at there. So you can follow that. Also, they will send you your brochure of all the planned events, give you links to all the stuff that you can browse through and sign up for, and do that. Plan as early as possible. That was one of the mistakes I made last time. Is I think I would go. I would start planning for my next trip. I will start planning it the moment they release it, the minute it comes open. And I think they start selling tickets a year ahead of time. No, probably not that soon. Probably like 6 months. Anyway, for the next one, I'm going to start as soon as possible because once you find the stuff that you like, you know, you're planning out your events and, okay, I want to make sure I go to this award show. I want to make sure I get in on this game. I want to make sure I see these when they do their demonstrations. It's a lot easier to plan out ahead of time because the earlier you go, the more stuff is open and the more freedom you have. Lots of the events I wanted to go to, they had it, you know, 20 different times, 30 different times that you can go to the exact same event. But the ones that are at the convenient times, the cool times, those all fill up fast. So I would get in early if possible. Oh, I should give a caveat though. I have only done this twice, and I'm not an expert at it, but this is just based on my very limited experience. So take it all with a grain of salt. But when it comes to the housing, at least from what I can see, your best bet is, well, there's two options, really. You can either go one of the hotels that are right there in the convention complex, and that's what we wound up doing, and those are going to be pricey. I mean, I think we paid, we were right there, you know, right across the catwalk. But there's a bunch of hotels all connected, and you don't even have to go outside to get from your room to the convention floor. And I think we paid nearly $200 a night for the room that we got. So, I mean, it was pricey. But if you want, you could also stay outside of town, which means, you know, you get something that's, you know, 10 miles out or something like that, where you can stay for, I think there was one, an Econo Lodge for like $40 a night. I mean, it was dirt cheap, not in the nicest area of town, obviously, but you can get a dirt cheap room. But then the trade-off is, well, you're a little ways away. You don't have the convenience of popping back up to your room every 10 minutes if you feel like it. But you just get a cab in the morning. You call a cab, they drive you in the morning. You call a cab, you drive back at night. So you're going to wind up paying, you know, $30, $40 a day for cab, possibly. I don't know how much cabs cost in Indy. But even with cab cost every single day to get back and forth, you're still saving yourself money. So it's up to you. Do you want to save some money and put up with a little extra hassle, or do you want the convenience of being right there? And we liked being right there, loved being right there. It was awesome. I would also, when you go, whatever schedule you lay out for yourself, block out some time for wandering the floor. Just you're going to want to go out and do the shopping. You're just going to want to wander through the area and just see everything. Do a little shopping, do a little looking. You may not actually buy a whole lot of stuff, but you'll want to spend some time doing it, a couple hours, 4 hours maybe. Make sure you block in the time for that. I made up a schedule for me and my son, and I knew exactly where we were going and what we were doing. And I just figured, oh, well, between times, we'll make sure that we get, you know, some time to go shopping. And I wish we hadn't felt so rushed every time we got there. I mean, we did good, and we had a great time. But make sure you block that out for yourself. What else for Gen Con? I mean, obviously, look, make sure you got comfortable shoes. Make sure you've got a bag to carry stuff in. If you're going to participate in games, make sure you're bringing your own dice and your pens and pencils and stuff like that. Get some scratch paper. Be prepared to sit down to a game. You know, you don't have to have your own game books, but you will have to have some materials. Or at least, yeah, you don't even have to have that, but it'd be much more convenient for you if you did. And which brings me to play some games. I was hesitant because I've never played games in a convention setting. I was a little worried about it. Sign up for something. Sign up for, I assume, since you found your way to the Animal Cast and since you found your way to Nerd Pride, I assume you're a gamer yourself, at least in passing. So sign up for something. Find a game that you really like. Sign up for that. All right, something that you know you're going to enjoy, you know you've already done, and then try signing up for something you've never tried before, something that sounds exciting and you've never done. But we only played in two game sessions when we were there. We did a Pathfinder game, which we loved. We've played tons of Pathfinder. And then we also tried out D&D 4 just to give it a shot and had a great time doing that. And in retrospect, God, I wish I had signed up for more games. I really wish I had done, you know, 4 or 5 of them. I would have had so much fun doing that. So, you know, if you're going to be there for the whole 4 days, for God's sake, make sure you get out and do that. When you're wandering the floor, I don't know if you're the kind that's going to go in costume yourself, but there are people in costume everywhere, and they are so cool. Go on to Nerd Pride and look for the Gen Con 2011 thread. Just do a search for Gen Con. But I have a Gen Con 2011 thread. I'll try and bump it so it's up on the front page again, where I give I relate the experience that we had this last time. And in it, I also give a photo record of every cool costume that we ran into. At first, we were a little bit shy about it. But when I went with my mom and my brother, Kyle and I were a little shy about asking people for their picture. You know, we just were a little nervous about it. Turns out we needn't have been shy at all. I mean, I think when we were there, we got a picture of us with, you know, some girl in a chainmail bikini, some, you know, paid model. We got a picture of ourselves with Fat Sand Person. He was awesome. Saw Fat Sand Person again this next time, too. Apparently he goes every year. But we didn't get a ton of pictures, and I regretted that. So when Gygax and I went, we were not shy at all. Every single costume we saw that it was even a little bit cool, girl in a bikini made out of dice, a girl dressed up as a Tetris block, 15-foot-tall Lincoln on stilts. We saw a great Harley Quinn. We saw Fat Captain America. We saw Pops from Regular Show. He was awesome. We saw Finn from Adventure Time. It never ended. And so every single awesome costume we saw, if it tickled us in any way, we just said, hey, can we get a picture with you? And they were always thrilled. I mean, there was with maybe one or two exceptions of someone who was in a hurry or whatever. Almost all of them are thrilled to death. They're dressing up in costume for a reason, because they want to show off. They want you to appreciate what they're doing. And they were thrilled to death to take pictures. And, I mean, a few of them went out, all out, and, you know, did poses, and they would act for you, and they were just great. I next time I go, I mean, I'm going to have a bingo card made up ahead of time so that I can know what costumes I am looking for, and we're going to check them off. And when I get that last one, I am going to shout bingo right there in the middle of the Gen Con convention hall, because it's just so much fun. It really is. So do that, and don't be shy. Just get yourself involved in stuff. Let's see, what else as long as you're going? Oh, okay, I know what. If you can hook up with friends while you're there, I mean, if there's people that you know are going to go to Gen Con, and I'm not this year, otherwise I would do this with you, but find some people just to hook up with, just to hang out. The one thing that I really, really wished I'd had was people to hang out with after hours. I mean, I was just there with my son, and we had all these plans, and we were going to be up early in the morning, so we went to bed, you know, at a reasonable hour, got 6-7 hours of sleep, got up and started all over again, had a great time. But in the evening, as I'm walking through the hotel lobbies, there's nothing but gamers everywhere, all right? Gamers are filling the bars. Gamers are filling the lobbies. They're all over the couches, hanging out. And half of them are just sitting there, you know, just talking. And the other half are actually playing games while they go, you know, someone's running to the bar to get beers for everybody. And then they come back, and so they're all drinking and partying and gaming all at once. And it was the kind of thing that I'm like, oh, I miss those days. I haven't spent an evening just hanging out, playing games, and getting drunk and having that much fun in a long time. I would have loved to do the after-hours crap, but it wasn't feasible at that time. I probably won't next time, too, but it depends. It depends. If there's going to be people, you know, maybe if the economy's a little more up and the kind of people I know are more inclined to be there, then maybe next time I go, I'll get some of that in the evening, because it's a great time, and I really wish I could have done more of that. That's most of what I got. Like I say, GenCon.com will answer almost all of your tickets and housing questions. Just go do that right away, and you'll be thrilled to death that you got it done early, and then they will send you your stuff. Find some good games to play. Honestly, get involved. Get involved. Play the games. Go to the stuff. If you get to an event like we went to the Nerd Beauty Pageant, and we went to, you know, make sure you hit some of those if you're interested. The Nerd Beauty Pageant was all right, but the costume competition, oh, if we had only planned better, if we had gotten in sooner, we could have rearranged stuff so that we could actually have seen the entire costume competition, because that thing's awesome. I really got a thing for the costumes there. They were great. But just do that stuff. And if you've got any more questions, like I say, I'm an amateur. I've been twice, and only once did I actually arrange things on my own. So I barely know anything, but I'm always happy to talk. You know that. So anything else, honestly, just ask. And that brings me to a new segment that I am calling Comic Timing.
It's just, you know, you're just funny. It's funny, you know, the way you tell the story and everything.
Funny how?
Man, I hope I found a good bumper clip for that. This is going to be my section. I realize I talk about stand-up comics and comedy in general a lot. I should include comic or comedy nerd. I should include that in my list of nerds at the beginning of the show because I talk about it a lot. I love comedy. I love stand-up comics. And I was just this morning listening to the WTF podcast with Mark Maron. Mark Maron was interviewing Kevin Pollak. This is an interview he did a couple months ago, maybe a long time. I've listened to him out of order, and his are kind of sporadic on who I choose to listen to. And Mark's doing an interview with Kevin Pollak. Kevin Pollak is an actor, stand-up comic, impressionist, very successful in what he does. I mean, he has achieved worlds of success, and he's very recognizable. And he's in this interview, he's just humble, and he was just fascinating to listen to. This, like I say, I pick and choose which episodes I'm going to listen to, and Kevin Pollak was one I wanted to hear because there's something about the man that just draws me to him. He's just fascinating. And so I'm loving the interview. I'm actually about three quarters of the way through right now. But the section this morning struck such a chord with me. It took me back to something that I hadn't even remembered had happened to me. And it was just, I can't even tell. I'll have to relate the whole story from the beginning. So Kevin Pollak is talking about how he got his start in stand-up comedy. And for him, it was listening to Bill Cosby albums as a kid. And according to Kevin Pollak, his love of stand-up comedy, when he realized that that's what he wanted to do with his life, the moment came for him when he was 10 years old. Right? And he's he's 13 years older than I am. So he was born in 57. So he's talking about in 1967, as a 10-year-old kid, his parents came home with Bill Cosby's first comedy album. And this was the name of the album, I think, Bill Cosby is a Very Funny Fellow. Right. That's the name of the album, 1963, that thing came out. His parents had it, and he watched his parents devolve into paroxysms of laughter over Bill Cosby's performance. And something about it so moved him that he knew he wanted to be the cause of that. He wanted to be the person that could make people break up like that, make his parents crack up like that. And so when no one else was in the house, he took out the album on vinyl, you know, old 1963, this is, so 67 when he's listening to it. He's putting it on their old hi-fi, and he's listening to this Bill Cosby album over and over and over until he has it completely memorized, right? Every bit of it, and he's lip-syncing to it. And he winds up getting caught by his mom lip-syncing to Bill Cosby. She thinks this is the funniest thing in the world, and so they start, you know, making him do that for friends and family, and he starts putting on shows for people, you know, every big family event or every, you know, whatever. He winds up going on stage and doing, you know, lip-syncing Bill Cosby, and this was what motivated him. And he knew he loved the stage. He loved the performing. He wanted more of that. And I, as I'm listening to him tell this story, and he's got a lot more detail in it, but it just, I realized, oh, my God, I did that. I did nearly exactly that. When I was 10 years old, and this was, you know, much later than him, so this was, you know, in 1980, we lived in Prattville, Alabama, and our neighbors, about three doors down, our neighbors had a friend of mine lived there, and he was a year younger, so he was nine, and his parents had one of the old hi-fi stereos that was, you know, the big giant cabinet. So as Pollak is describing this hi-fi stereo, that's exactly what I'm picturing, because these neighbors had that exact same kind of cabinet with the huge built-in speakers, and it's one giant piece of furniture that does nothing but play albums, and, you know, it's got the little stacker thing on top. So at best, you can, you know, you can play a few hours of music on it at once. And my friend's parents had that exact same Bill Cosby album. They had a couple others, but that one was my favorite, because that album has the story of Noah on it. And if you've not heard Bill Cosby tell his Noah story, it is perfection. In a comedy routine, it is truly, truly masterful. All right, and my friend and I would play that together, and I loved it. I cannot tell you, it just moved me. I loved listening to Bill Cosby's comedy, and especially the Noah bit. That was my favorite. And in fact, as Kevin Pollak says, you know, as he's listening to Bill Cosby and he's learning how to mimic Bill Cosby and he's learning to lip sync this whole routine and he's got the whole thing memorized, he said, I didn't realize at the time that I was learning my comic timing from a Jedi master. But that's really what he was doing, and he was absolutely sincere about it, and it's true. Bill Cosby is one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest. The man is a genius. No matter what you think of his pudding pops, and you know, he's getting old now, and he's, you know, it's different now, but he truly in his day was the tops. And all right, so here I am at 10 years old memorizing the Bill Cosby album, because I remember on more than one occasion I went over to my friend's house, because, you know, they just live three doors away, and this was a day and age, a place where nobody locked their doors, nobody ever, and so I can remember on more than one occasion going to their house and nobody's home. I mean, they're not there. My friend's not there. There's nobody home. So I went ahead and let myself in. And I went into their house, and I got their albums out, and I put Bill Cosby on the hi-fi, and I sat there and listened to Bill Cosby in a neighbor's house all by myself, usually with the lights out. I never bothered to turn the lights on like that. So here I am sitting in the dark in the neighbor's empty house listening to Bill Cosby on the hi-fi over and over. I mean, I did it a lot. Until I absolutely had that thing memorized. Now, I didn't do the lip syncing like Kevin Pollak did, but I certainly used that material to impress people. And I'm hoping, now that I've, you know, 30 years have passed since then, I'm hoping that I gave attribution every time I went out and did Bill Cosby's act, because I did it a lot, and I did it word for word, and I mean, I had it down, and I was really, really good at it. I hope that every time I did it, I went, hey, have you heard this bit from Bill Cosby? I'm hoping I told people where it came from and didn't just pretend I made it up myself, because that's the kind of thing as a 10-year-old I might have done, even though no one would believe I did, I might have. But it just moved me. And I know for Kevin Pollak, that translated to him, you know, having a lifelong love of stage and comedy. For me, it was just a lot of entertainment for a while. But I remember having that same fascination, that same wonderment at Bill Cosby. And like I say, just like him, I memorized it. I performed it for friends. I used it to entertain. I used it to, I don't know, just create that joy and that laughter at other people that I had seen, that I had felt myself the first time I listened to it. Because even at 10, I knew that material was brilliant. It was the funniest thing I had ever heard. And it's still, I've gone back and listened to it since then. It holds up really, really well. It's just amazing stuff. And again, I don't know if I have a whole point to this other than Bill Cosby's good. You should go check out his stuff. But for me, it was just a really odd moment as I'm in my car driving to work, listening to Kevin Pollak's description of the scene. And once I got to work, I sat in there for like 10 minutes. I couldn't get out of the car because I couldn't stop listening to this particular story, because it was just, I didn't even remember that I had ever done that. I mean, I knew that I loved that Bill Cosby piece. I remembered that part. But I didn't remember going over to the neighbor's empty house when they're not home, breaking into their home just to listen to their Bill Cosby records. I forgot that I did that. And I even remember at the time, I remember breaking into their house, going in because no one was home, and thinking, wow, I should really go now. I'm like, well, yeah, but if they're not here, they won't mind if I listen to their records. I mean, what's it going to hurt, right? And so I did, and then I carefully cleaned up after myself and took off. But again, completely forgot that I did that until right now. It was just weird. So, okay, I'm sorry. I am lost in my own reveries here, and I'm probably boring the crap out of you. But go out to YouTube. I'm sure if you go on YouTube, you will find recordings of that you can listen to for free. Or better yet, go out and buy the album, because it's really that good. Every bit on that album. And I think they had three or four of his albums by that point. And I listened to all of them and devoured them. And I had all of them memorized. And now if I go back and listen, I can't remember the Noah bit or any of the other bits. I can't remember any of them now, except for little snips and pieces of them. But if I go back and listen to them, oh, yeah, I can actually, once I get the rhythm of it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. And then I can start for most of it. I can recite along with them because it sticks in my mind that well. But anyway, enough of this topic. It's really time to move on. Now it's time for a nerd culture report.
I thought this was Bowling for Weirdos.
Thank you, Gonzo. Yes, this is Bowling for Weirdos. I don't even know if this is nerd culture, but something I have always been fascinated with, always, is celebrity baby names. And this is not an original topic. You've seen articles on, you know, 20 weirdest baby names or a list of 100 celebrity baby names, whatever. Doesn't make any difference. But it's something that has always fascinated me that people would actually name their kids these horrible, terrible things. And I've made fun of them many times over the years. And then just the other day, I'm listening to yet another podcast, and I hear them talking about Jay-Z and Beyonce's new baby, Blue Ivy. And Blue Ivy, turns out, is also the name of a strain of marijuana. And it turns out that Beyonce and Jay-Z's baby came first, and then once they named their baby Blue Ivy, some clever pot grower decided that would also make a great name for their pot. So there is now also a strain of marijuana named Blue Ivy that you can buy if you live in a state where medical marijuana is legal. And as I'm listening to it, and the people talking were talking about the name Blue Ivy and how odd that was, and it occurred to me that, yeah, you know what? It doesn't even faze me anymore. I'm actually listening to it going, you know, Blue Ivy, that's actually not a bad name. Blue is pretty much an acceptable name nowadays. Usually celebrities are using Blue as a middle name, and there's lots of them out there. But as I go back and I start looking over the list of names I've made fun of in the past, I don't really think they're all that bad. Maybe I've just gotten soft in my old age. But Penn Jillette, all right, what did Penn Jillette name his daughter? Moxie Crimefighter. Crimefighter because his wife has no middle name, and they therefore believe that middle names are absolutely pointless. So as long as it's not a name you're going to use or care about, why not have some fun with it and name her Crimefighter? All right, Crimefighter is stupid. I will grant you that. But Moxie ain't a bad name. Moxie's kind of cool. I guess it's gotten to the point where outlandish names that are not even outlandish, but names that are unusual, don't faze me like they used to. I used to think, because there used to be a real stigma attached. If you didn't have something that people recognized as a traditional name, it was a stigma, and it was something that people could make fun of you for. But nowadays, I don't think that's exactly true, or at least not as true as it used to be. And so something like Moxie, that's just not a bad name at all. Greg Barrett, who is a comedian I listen to all the time on the Walking the Room podcast. Again, if you go listen to Walking the Room based on my recommendation, realize it's the dirtiest thing you've ever listened to. You've been warned. Okay. But Greg Barrett talks about his daughters on his podcast all the time, and they're little girls right now. And his daughters' names are True and Mighty. And again, now True's not a bad name. True sounds really good. It's a good, strong name. But Mighty? He named his daughter Mighty. And it sang, the first time I heard him say it, I'm like, why would you do that? Why would you do that to a kid? But the more he talks about her, it's like, no, that's her name. She's Mighty. It's kind of cool. I really have no problem with that. Okay, if I were Jason Lee, would I have gone with Pilot Inspector? No, that's really, really stupid. And Pilot just isn't even that great a name. I mean, yeah, I can get away with, all right. I think this makes it up with the fourth time I've mentioned Nick Cage's kid, but Kal-El, all right, so you're named after Superman, but Kal is not a bad name. You know, I'm sure they just call him Kal. It's not like you're calling him Kal-El all the time. And who was the singer, rocker from the 60s named their kid America? I can't remember who it was that did that. And at the time, America was a freakish name, but now America Ferrera is you know, big TV star and Ugly Betty. You know who I'm talking about? Okay. America is not a bad name. And if she doesn't like America, call her Amy. I mean, it's really that easy. And Gwyneth Paltrow, Apple. I can live with that. The ones that are still unacceptable, though. Let me just say, because like I said, Blue Ivy, Moxie, Kal. Kid. David Duchovny and Tia Leone named their kid Kid. All right. It's a little clever, a little weird. But Kid ain't a bad name. They spelled it K-Y-D. Okay, whatever. No, the names that are unacceptable is any traditional name with a bizarre, non-intuitive spelling. All right, the minute you start ending your name with G-H and you throw in extra vowels, or everything's got to be substituted with a Y, or, you know what? If you're going to give them a traditional name, spell it at least close to traditionally. I mean, just at least close, only because you're making more work for them their whole life. Every time, name, and then they have to give their name, and then they have to bother spelling it, and then they have to explain why the spelling is so stupid. Don't put them through that. All right, but the other one, not acceptable. Not acceptable at all. Joke names, all right? Rob Morrow. Rob Morrow names his kid Two, so her name is Two Morrow. All right, you're just mean. It's not funny, and you're stupid. David Bowie and his kid Zoe Bowie. Really? Is that what you want? Okay, those are completely unacceptable, but the rest of them, wait, and Shannon Sossaman, of course. Audio Science. Okay, that one's not even a bad joke. It's not. It's just a dumb name. All right. But for the most part, a lot of these unusual names, I don't mind them so much anymore. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's that the culture changed, and so therefore it's just more acceptable. I don't know if it's just me because I've decided to be less judgmental, or I don't know what. But it just struck me as I heard of Beyonce's baby Blue Ivy, and I realized, oh, Blue Ivy, no, that's not bad. That's what stopped me. I'm like, not so bad. What is wrong with you? You're supposed to rail against this stuff. Yeah, no, this isn't really a rage anymore. This is just kind of okay, cool. I can live with that. Sure. You know what you want now? You want a little Roku! I love my Roku. Why did no one tell me? I had the day off on Monday for President's Day. And I discovered that the new season of Futurama was released onto Netflix, so all the episodes are now available for me, which must mean that the next season is now starting right away. I haven't looked to see if that's true. But last year's season, all of a sudden, all the episodes are all available, and I have no idea how long they've been there. I asked my kids, and they're like, I don't know, for a while. What? Well, then why didn't you tell me? Futurama, for goodness sake. And so here I had all these plans for President's Day because the family all still had to go to school. I've got the house to myself, the whole day off. I'm going to get some stuff done. And it turns out that, there's now 13 episodes of Futurama that I haven't seen because I don't watch them when they come out currently. I mean, I've caught bits and pieces of it. There's parts where I'd look and go, oh, yeah, I remember seeing that. But for the most part, I don't make time for them because I got other things going on. I like to save my TV and watch it all on Roku. It's what I do. And this season of Futurama was wonderful. I had a great time watching this one. The last season before this one, and I don't even know what seasons we're up to now. Was this season 6 I just watched this week? So that would be season 5 was the last one that I was a little annoyed with. It was season 6, so I must be watching season 7 now. Anyway, doesn't make any difference. Last season, I had fun. I enjoyed it. I've watched all the episodes at least a couple of times. But it was not their best season. They clearly, in a lot of episodes, they took some time out. They took a lot of liberties with the show just to make specific jokes. And then the episode's all over. Like when they wanted to explore robosexual marriage. All right. And so they contrived in the first 5 minutes to have Amy and Kif break up so that Amy can then have an affair with Bender. We can explore robosexual marriage. And then by the very end of the episode, okay, guess what? We found a way to work it all back and they're back together. And it seemed, obviously it was supposed to appear contrived because it was contrived. They were making a point. But those were a little jarring. There was no real consistency. And I know searching for internal consistency in a show like Futurama is a little silly, but they do make an effort in that show to have a real history and have things tie together. And even when things get a little silly and out of hand, it all comes back around full circle and everything makes sense together. And they've done some really huge dramatic stories within the comedy. They've done some really moving stories within the comedy. And I love those. And this season, the one that I just watched, was just so much better written. I was much happier with the stories, not just the jokes. I appreciate the jokes, but I like a good story, and I don't care as much for them when they're trying to be topical, like robosexual marriage, and I like it more when they're making general commentary on the human condition or they're telling a story about these people and making it something meaningful. And so this particular season was very Bender heavy and very Zoidberg heavy. And I loved that. We got so much background on Zoidberg and his history back when, you know, before he was a complete pathetic loser, when he had at least a modicum of respect and he was thin. And I'm sitting down one of the episodes I saw again later with a tie-in. And he's like, wow, it's so weird seeing Zoidberg thin and young, as if we're watching a live actor. And it was weird because that's what it was. I mean, they're giving us these old shots of Zoidberg when he was younger. And I'm like, yeah, oh, wow, look at that. Back when he was young, and it was just cool. And so I think the writing on this latest season that I just saw, I think it was way better than it was the season before. I tried to go in and look up who the writers were, but you have to go up and look them up episode by episode. And, you know, for the season I didn't care as much for, I found like 4 or 5 different writers already. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to be able to make any sense of this. And it was way too much research. So I don't know who was in charge of what. I don't know if they had some, you know, overall story coordinator that, you know, organized the entire season and made things a little more consistent, a little more meaningful. But whatever it was, new season of Futurama is awesome. And therefore, I recommend that you watch it if you haven't already. Again, nobody told me. You guys probably all watched it 3 weeks ago, or you saw it when it all came out last year, and now you're just laughing at me. I don't care. I had a great time. So that's what I've done with my Roku! Which means it's time for the Badass Movie Quote of the Week. All right, this week's quote, I'm just going to start right into it. Quote, Keaton always said, I don't believe in God, but the only thing that scares me is Kaiser Soze. Yeah, see, that's obviously Kevin Spacey as Verbal Kent from the movie Usual Suspects. And I'm not going to give away anything more than that. I had a whole plan here to give a couple other quotes from him and then maybe a few spoilers about the movie. But you know what? As old as that movie is, I'm not going to bother to spoil it. If you haven't seen The Usual Suspects, go out and watch it because you will love it. In fact, I just heard in that interview with Kevin Pollak, he was in The Usual Suspects, and he was talking about how it seems like every year there's this whole new crop of usually, you know, young college students who are just discovering The Unusual Suspects or The Usual Suspects for the first time and sharing it with their friends. And so he says he gets new fans every year. It's a little cult thing that goes on college campuses. So if you haven't watched Usual Suspects, go do it. If you have, you know what I'm talking about. The movie's awesome. And all that leaves us now is the very abbreviated Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Well, send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to our Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Our first number this week is number 12. This one is from a Mr. Brasky. Brasky says, what's the coldest letter in the alphabet? What kind of question is that? It would have to be an O. It just is. I mean, the whole sound of it. Ooh. That's why ghosts make that noise. It's chilling. O has to be the coldest letter in the alphabet. Unless this is a riddle I'm not aware of. Which means, God, I should really go Google this and find out if I'm missing the joke. But I'm not gonna. Number 5. All right, this one is from Sirius Paul. Yeah, and Sirius Paul, if it was going to be a bigger list this week, Sirius Paul should be big this time around because he just submitted yet another 30 or 40 entries for the Pod-O-Matic. So the dude dominates. And Paul's question is, do you like Toontown? No, I don't like Toontown. It scares me. It's creepy. Or at least, all right, Toontown as depicted in Roger Rabbit, just mostly creepy and dirty and scary. It's as if, you like the idea of Toontown, the concept of it, you know, the idea of a place where cartoons run free and anything can happen, and yet I think the movie gave a fairly accurate rendition of what can happen when anything can happen. When they're doing some of the chase scene stuff, and I mean, it's just this total pandemonium. I'm uncomfortable with that. Oh, it just frightens me. And I don't think I've seen a Toontown depiction. What was the Brad Pitt one? Cool World? They had their own version of Toontown. I wasn't thrilled to death with that one either. So far, no, Toontown, not my bag. Not a place I want to vacation. Sorry. Number 19. This one comes from Brasky. Brasky says, flip a coin. Okay, hold on. I got a coin here somewhere. Just a second. Okay, there we go. If it's heads, tell us an old gaming war story, preferably from the Red Map era with Sandy Dean. If it's tails, then talk about Winnie Cooper and her recent efforts to get lay people interested in math. You know what? Both of those work for me. Hold on a second. And it's heads! All right, well, time for a war story. Sorry, Winnie Cooper. As hot as you are, I am gonna have to pass in favor of an old Dungeons & Dragons story. All right. We played... Brasky is referring to the Red Map era. When we were 12, 13 years old, we played Dungeons & Dragons on this gigantic red map. It was I drew the whole thing in red pencil, and it was a castle-slash-catacombs thing. And it was incredibly detailed and incredibly nonsensical. There were doors and hallways and rooms and secret passages and stairwells that all interconnected for no logical reason whatsoever. And as we gamed in, I mean, this was dungeon delving at its best. This was the dungeon crawl because as we went through it, there was no rhyme or reason. There was no purpose in being there other than that's just where we started our adventure is, okay, you guys enter the dungeon. And then we just... Every week, it was just room to room to room, killing, looting, sacking. And again, the ecology of this place, there's no good reason for any of this. There's, you know, black dragons are wedged in there somewhere where there's no entry or exit. There's no way it could have gotten in except to have been brought here as an egg and hatched here. Same thing with giants and certain other creatures. It was ludicrous. But we had a ton of fun because every single one was... The puzzles were built on a room size, or maybe sometimes three or four rooms together, but each encounter, each puzzle was built on just that room or that little group of rooms, and they had to figure out what was going on, and they had to avoid the traps, and they had... And I assume... Oh, you know, we had so many good ones from that era. Probably my favorite, and this was stupid, all right? It was me, as a dungeon master, intentionally designing... a room simply to foil their most common tactics. That's all it was. But it taught us something. They walk into this room and the ceiling is covered with cobwebs. And so the adventuring party that they were at that time, their initial reaction to a ceiling full of cobwebs was always to jam a torch up there, light the thing on fire, and crisp anything that's living inside. That was always their plan. And so knowing that as the dungeon master, I just created a situation, a completely nonsensical situation, to punish them for doing what they always do. And in this particular case, the cobwebs were way up, and so in order to reach it with their torches, the two tall characters, the elf and the human, took the other two short characters, a dwarf and a halfling, and lifted them up on their shoulders so that they could reach up high enough with their torches to burn everything. And, of course, evil as I was, in this room, the cobwebs were actually supporting giant stone blocks so that once they were burned, the stone blocks then fall on our intrepid heroes and smush them. And the way it worked out, and here's the thing that it taught us, is I think this was the first time that they were like, well, crap, we're going to dive for it. We've got to get out of here. Okay. And so they go to make their roll to get out. And it was like, we had to figure out, what do you roll for that? You know, there wasn't a specific rule for dodging the falling stone. And so we went with, you know, dexterity rolls. We used dexterity bonus or we gave some basic dexterity roll. And they wound up getting out with minimal bumping and bruising. But as a 12-year-old, that was interesting for us because it was one of the first times that we kind of went off script and did something that wasn't immediately covered by the rules. It wasn't just it's a frost giant. Well, I guess I'm going to stab it with my sword. I'll chop it with my axe. Let's throw a fireball. These are all things that worked really well, but we had rules for all of that. And so, you know, every room they went to, they would do some of these things. And this was the first time that we had something completely new and something that was outside the box, as it were. And it's just a small thing. It was just the rock's falling. I'm going to dive out of the way. But even something as simple as that, we actually had to apply ourselves and figure out how we were going to make the rules do that with us. So educational and a lot of fun. We have actually tons of other great stories like that one. But he only asked for one. So, moving on. And this will be my last one. Told you, it's going to be a shortened episode this week. Number 85. This one is from Sirius Paul again. And Sirius Paul says, another D&D question. All right. How would the original lineup of Cheers be translated into Dungeons & Dragons class-wise? Oh, you're going to have to give me a moment to think on this one. All right. Obviously, the party leader is Sam. Sam is clearly the party leader. And Sam is a straight-up fighter. This one's the easy one. I have absolutely no problem with that. Because that's what he does. He's a former, in the real world, former athlete. So in D&D, he is a fighter. I was going to make him a classic hand-to-hand sword fighter. But you know what? I think I'm going to have him multitask. I think he is more flexible than that because, in real life as a pitcher, in the Cheers world, as a pitcher, he's got a good eye for ranged weapons. So I'm going to say that he is not really optimized because he has chosen to take dual focuses on both swordsmanship and on archery. All right, so he is formidable with both, but a master of neither because he's chosen to divide his skills. All right, that's Sam. Who's next? Coach. All right, Coach is clearly a sorcerer. I would have made him a wizard, but he just doesn't have the brain power for that. So we'll make him a bumbling sorcerer. Carla. Carla's our barbarian. Clearly Carla is the barbarian. I could have gone rogue. I understand that. But she doesn't. She is sneaky, but she's just a sneaky barbarian. I mean, when she's enraged, have you seen her? Have you seen Carla enraged? That's clearly barbarian rage there. All right. Yes. Yes, she's putting a lot of her skills into sneaking and stealth and stuff like that, because that's the personality, but she's still a barbarian. Diane, obviously, is the wizard. I have no problem with that one. And I don't even have a good classification for it. It's Diane's the wizard. We're good with that. Which means now I'm down to Cliffy and Norm. Yeah. This is going to be tough for me. But I'm going to go with Cliff as a bard. He's the storyteller, all right? And the interesting thing about Cliff is he is a bard with no social skills. I don't know if that translates into a low charisma. I mean, he's high intelligence, so what does that do for his spellcasting? I'm not quite sure, but he's going to be, it's going to be Cliff Clavin, mailman, bard. All right, and that just leaves me with Norm, which is sad, by the way, because I would have loved to do Woody Harrelson in this one. Because Woody Harrelson taking over for Coach, I actually think Woody Harrelson also would have filled the sorcerer role. I have that. I mean, simple-minded, but charismatic. I feel that. But it's not about Woody Harrelson today. It's about Norm. You know what? I just realized we don't have a cleric yet. I'm going to make Norm the cleric. That's the only obvious way to go. He's going to be our fat Friar Tuck. George Wendt can play that role for us. He's good. So that's my lineup. I would recap it, but I don't know that I can remember all of them. So, there you go. And that's a wrap. This podcast is copyright 2012 by Nerd Pride Radio. This week's theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. If you feel like doing something nice for the podcast, head on over to iTunes and write us a nice review. Or if you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the best way to talk to me is always to come to our forums, sign up, and send me a private message at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up, you send me a message, we will hang out together, and we'll have fun. Okay, R2, you win. One more. Number two is from Stan. Stan sends us an F Mary Kill, which we will translate to Kiss Mary Kill. He's going to give me three options, and I will have to choose one of them for a wild night of passionate snogging. kissing, as it were. One of them, who I will marry and live with for the rest of my natural life. And then the third one, I will have to kill. So, the three choices offered to me by Stan are, very topical, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, and Ron Paul. All right. As the least crazy among them, I'm going to have to marry Mitt Romney. He's a stable, wealthy Mormon. I think I could tolerate being married to Mitt Romney forever. All right. He seems the most stable of the three. I'm good with that. Because Newt's philandering is just too much, and Ron Paul's crazy is also too much. So there's one. That just leaves me to pick one to kill and one to snog. And as much as I would love to put Newt Gingrich in the kill category here, I cannot imagine choosing Ron Paul for the snogging. I just really... doesn't that just make your skin crawl? So, pudgy, cherubic Newt Gingrich is going to have to be my kiss partner for this one, as much as it grieves me to say so. And then, Ron Paul, I'm sorry, for purposes of this mental exercise, I'm going to have to put you in the ground. It's the only way to go.